From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Confusion abounds whether the November 3rd election results will actually be known by the end of the night. That confusion has been deliberately sown by the President of the United States, who appears to realize he is likely to lose to Joe Biden by a landslide if surveys of the public are accurate. Add to that the coronavirus pandemic and the dangers of in-person voting versus the uncertainty of voting by mail. Now, a political scientist has examined possible election night scenarios to determine which states could hold up the results. Michael Latner is a professor of political science at California Polytechnic State University and a senior fellow at the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. He's also a faculty scholar at the Cal Poly Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's first talk about how critically important it is for people to be able to mail in their ballots, whether or not their ballots will be received at a time of a pandemic. Is it a matter of public health that vote by mail options are very much available and convenient?
It is absolutely a matter of public health. We have seen a massive surge in requests for absentee ballots and vote by mail ballots across the country. Some states are quite well prepared. Indeed, states that already have universal vote by mail really haven't changed much this year. But we're also seeing a number of states where we have real concerns. We're seeing 5-10 times the number of ballot requests in counties in states like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania in particular. And those states don't have the infrastructure and the capacity to process, and in many cases, they don't have the laws in place to process ballots efficiently. And that's going to cause many problems and probably delays in when we know who the winner of those states is.
So there are states that have already just universally been sending people ballots that they could choose to fill out by mail if they wanted. So for them, they were almost sort of pre-prepared for a pandemic. And then other states that decided upon the pandemic that they should start doing that. But there are states that even if they're sending out ballots to voters unsolicited, they may not have the capacity to process all of those ballots if those ballots are widely used?
That's right. In particular, Pennsylvania, as the law currently stands, there is some pending litigation and the state legislature comes back into session mid-October. But as the law stands today, they won't begin processing their ballots until Election Day. And you have a massive surge of increased vote by mail requests and ballots that are being sent out, in particular in counties like Allegheny and Philadelphia County, the counties with the largest number of people of color and voters of color. They're potentially we're going to see larger problems there in terms of processing the ballots, both because when those ballots are sent, when you change people's behavior and they're voting by a new method for the first time, you're going to see higher error rates because people are choosing a new method. And unless those ballots are processed on time, if there are errors, there's no time for the local election officials to contact those voters and let them have a chance to cure their ballots or verify their ballots. And then on top of that, just the rush and the need to process all those ballots in such a short time is going to create more error as well.
And of course, the fact that Pennsylvania is a battleground, so-called swing state, is a part of the issue here, right? I mean, if you have the election coming down to results in a handful of battleground states, which is generally what tends to happen every 4 years, then what specifically happens in those states takes on an outsized importance compared to the states that are sort of reliably Republican or reliably Democratic.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the point should be made that there is a high likelihood that we're going to know who the winner of the presidential race is on election night. Given what we've seen in the polling and given what we know about how certain states perform. So Florida, for example, has some experience with vote by mail. They have better infrastructure in place, and we're probably going to see most of their absentee ballots processed and counted on election night. So we'll have a good idea of who wins a key swing state like Florida. But again, these Midwest states, they have created problems for themselves, in part because the state legislatures have been unresponsive to the needs of voters.
So you have this situation with these ballots that are being mailed back in some states. They will get counted or will begin to get counted in advance, giving them more time to tally. In other states, it's on the day off, which means we might have to wait for results. I mean, what is the reasoning being given for waiting until election day to tally votes? If they're being sent and if there is a secure place where the votes are being held and being counted, why not allow them to be counted early? For example, in California, where you and I are, we have early in-person voting. We're starting on October 24th in some voting centers, or as late as October 30th in other places. Voters can go and cast their ballots in person. Presumably, if those can be accepted, states can begin counting ballots they receive by mail early.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Many states, including California, begin processing those ballots as soon as they receive them. And so, a state like California, which has a long experience with vote by mail, we're not going to experience those kind of problems. Local election officials will be immediately contacting voters if there's a problem with verifying their ballots. So voters will have plenty of time to respond and to verify their identity, indeed after election day. So we have a 4-week period in California where if there's a problem with the ballot, a voter still has an opportunity to correct any problems with their ballots. And we're seeing exactly the opposite in some other states where there's litigation over whether or not ballots that aren't clearly postmarked, if they can even be processed 3 or 6 days after the election. So it's a very concerning problem in a small number of states.
What about Michigan? Michigan is another one of these battleground states. Is the and you have states like Wisconsin. Can you? We've talked about Pennsylvania, but can you go through some of the potential problems in states like Michigan or Wisconsin on election night?
Yeah, I believe that many scholars that are paying attention are thinking about Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania as the potential trifecta for a tragedy on election night, in part because of the mail-in ballot problems, but also the uncertainty about whether or not ballots will be counted if the postmark is not clear, how many days they can be counted after election day. There is pending litigation on that. But in addition to that, I would also point to the failure of Congress to act in this case. What we're seeing in these states and others is that local election officials are strapped for finances. Congress failed to deliver the $3.6 billion that we needed in emergency infrastructure election funding this year through the HEROES Act. And so these states are just left without the resources and the infrastructure that they need, which means that there are going to be more problems, that there's less opportunity for early in-person voting, as you mentioned earlier, and there will be more problems on election day. And those problems are not borne equally across the population. So one of the things we know from previous research is that waiting times on election day are considerably longer in more densely populated urban precincts and precincts with more people of color. And so what we end up seeing are racial disparities, not only in turnout and inequality in voter participation, but in the way and the accuracy of the vote count and the rejection rates of ballots and the like. And so what we see are these cumulative problems that result from a lack of resources.
And of course, if there is a lengthy wait time for in-person voting in communities of color during a pandemic that disproportionately affects communities of color, you see that, I imagine, as an added public health risk.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why states need to provide every option available for voters to determine for themselves how to cast a safe and secure vote. And that includes early voting by mail. It includes early in-person voting, use of ballot drop boxes so that voters can receive a ballot in the mail. And if they don't choose to use the postal service, they can drop that ballot off in a conveniently placed drop box that will go directly to the local election officials.
There's also the state of Texas. I know it's not a battleground state necessarily, but the government...
It's a legal battleground, that's for sure.
Right. And so the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, has recently, in what seems to be a kind of brazen move in favor of Republicans, and he is a Republican, decided to have only one drop box for mail-in ballots to be dropped off per county. Texas is a huge state. Geographically, it's just massive. So if you live in one part of a county and there's only one box in the entire county, you might have to drive a very far distance to do that. That's been legally challenged, I understand, right?
That's right, in Harris County in particular. And there have been a number of activities. It's not just the governor, but the attorney general as well in Texas has actually taken the unprecedented step of threatening to sue local election officials if when they wanted to send out ballot applications and mail ballots to voters to ease the burden and expand the option for voters. So Texas has been particularly problematic in retaining its restrictive election laws, also not allowing people to use COVID or fear of infection from COVID as an excuse to vote by mail. And so there are still quite restrictive absentee ballot measures on the books in Texas as the election is less than 1 month away.
What about states where there is a legal fight over requiring a witness's signature? You know, I can imagine an elderly person who might be living alone, for whom it's a risk to go out and vote in person, and who may not have the person there to witness their signature, being deeply impacted by such rules.
Well, indeed. And we have seen a number of states, North Carolina among them, that have relaxed their witness and notary requirements. But again, looking across the landscape of the United States, what we see are massive disparities in the cost of voting. And so every time that you add an additional barrier, whether it's a witness requirement or a public notary requirement, registration deadlines and the like, these all work to exacerbate inequalities in voter participation. And there is simply no excuse for keeping these barriers. The excuse that is often given is that the idea is that this is going to secure the election against voter fraud. But as we know from a large body of research, voter fraud is a vanishingly small problem in the American political system. Election fraud, where election officials are actually engaged in illegal procedures, is actually more common. But we're talking about hundreds of convictions among millions of votes cast over the last few election cycles. And so it's simply not a legitimate excuse to keep these barriers in place, especially when we know that the effects are not borne equally across the population.
And then there's Florida, ground zero of the 2000 election problems. What can we expect to happen? And also, of course, Florida being a Republican-controlled state with Republicans showing greater desperation to weigh in on how our voting systems might be working and trying to sort of restrict voting rights. How might Florida play out on election night this year?
Well, as I'm sure you're familiar, one of the big legal challenges in Florida this year has been the question of recently passed election law through the initiative process, where Florida went through a process of felon enfranchisement and opened up the voting process to felons who had served their sentences. However, the state legislature then quickly changed law and put in place what is effectively a poll tax with regard to requiring felons who had completed their sentences to pay off any restitution or other fees associated with their sentences. And we're seeing the litigation here really get out of hand in terms of even in the case of Michael Bloomberg, former Democratic candidate, using his own resources to try to pay some of those fines and fees. That too has been legally challenged in court. And so there are many legal problems with Florida, but in terms of their actual voting system, the procedures itself are in pretty good shape in terms of their experience with vote by mail and their processing of ballots on election night. And so I'm actually looking to Florida as one of the states that will give us a pretty good idea of how the election is unfolding on election night.
There have been several claims made by President Trump recently and some of his allies about U.S. postal workers participating in or being some, you know, part of some, if you listen to the president, some nefarious plot to disenfranchise Trump voters. He claimed during last week's debate about a postal worker being caught selling or trying to sell ballots. Now, there's a story in New Jersey of a gentleman who was arrested when he was caught having dumped ballots that were meant to be mailed in. And then there was a case of a handful of ballots that were military ballots that were apparently found in a trash can marked for Trump. If you listen to, you know, some people, it sounds as though there is a systemic problem across the country. Is there a systemic problem? And are you at all concerned about some of these instances we're hearing about?
Sure. It's hard to know where to start with these particular stories, but they all share a few things in common. On the one hand, some of them are pure disinformation with regard to the nine ballots in Wisconsin, I believe, or the military ballots. Mm-hmm. Those were from the 2018 election, and they had nothing to do with the 2020 election, and they were discovered. More often than not, many of these stories either begin with a kernel of truth, with, you know, a few ballots being discovered, but often, as is the case with I think every case that you just mentioned, there is some level of disinformation there. That is, the story has either been rearranged or the facts have just been completely fabricated in many cases. And what we do know about absentee ballot fraud is that the states that have moved to more to vote by mail procedures over the last few decades have not seen a significant increase in election fraud or voter fraud. And more often than not, and this is really important to keep in mind, is that in all the cases that you mentioned, we're not talking about voter fraud at all. We're talking about there's no fault of the voter. And indeed, the only large-scale case of fraud where we've actually seen it to have big enough effect to shape an election was in the 2018 race, the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina, where operatives were taking ballots and either filling them out or throwing them away. And that race had to be held over again. There was a group of Republican operatives that were involved in that.
You mean again, people from the same party that keep alleging there's massive voter fraud?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the claims of voter fraud are coming, you know, disproportionately from the Republican Party. And the problem here is that we have really, for the first time in American history, a party system where one party is seeking advantage because the growing electorate, both in terms of race and age, the younger electorate, as those people are moving into the electoral process, that is advantaging the Democratic Party. The Republican Party has historically been dependent on older and white voters, and rather than competing for the votes of the new electorate, what we are seeing is an effort to shape the electorate so that the Republican Party is less disadvantaged. And it's really unfortunate given the history of the Voting Rights Act, which was passed with strong bipartisan coalition in 1965. And then the revisions to the Voting Rights Act, really up until the last vote that was taken to restore the Voting Rights Act, where Representative Lewis actually held the gavel prior to his death. And that was almost an entirely party line vote. There was only one Republican that voted to renew and restore the Voting Rights Act the last time it came up for vote. And it really is a tragedy. And it is part of the consequence of the sort of polarization that we're seeing in our two-party system.
We talked about the potential problems of counting mail-in ballots in time. What about delays in the mail itself? That's a big concern. You know, there's been so much in the news about U.S. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy undermining the Postal Service's ability to get delivery on time, so much so that many voters who do have the option to vote safely by mail are choosing to vote in person because they just don't trust that their ballot will make it in time.
Yeah, and that is a legitimate problem. And the Union of Concerned Scientists is actually preparing a piece of research now that looks at the complaints and problems with the U.S. Postal Service. There are a couple of things there that I'd like to point out, though. All the evidence that we have indicates that the actual postal workers themselves, the people that are delivering the mail, are very committed to ensuring that that all ballots are delivered. And this capacity problem, I think, has been somewhat distorted by those at the top of the organization, frankly. The U.S. Postal Service delivers millions of pieces of mail a day. And so even the increase that we're seeing in absentee ballots is not a particular challenge for the U.S. Postal Service. And on top of that, I think it's also important to add that, you know, the president's appointments of people to to head these organizations, this is not simply a partisan maneuver. And so getting back to the point of polarization, I think it's really important to note that there's a small group of individuals and leaders that are both propagating the myth that voter fraud is a problem or that vote by mail cannot be trusted. But this is not just a partisan problem, because bipartisan reforms have been made. And so you look at a state like Colorado, Republicans and Democrats working together to develop efficient, effective voting systems, and they follow best practices. And there are many Republicans and Democrats working together to ensure that this is a safe and secure election for the country as a whole. And so I think that's really important to keep in mind.
Finally, we have been hearing more and more about President Trump recruiting poll watchers. He has called on people who support him to join the army of Trump. I mean, there's literally a website, armyoftrump.com, where people can sign up to watch the polls. There was a federal consent decree from the 1980s to keep Republicans' poll watching efforts that are basically voter intimidation efforts in check. But it expired 2 years ago. Is that a fear as well that voters need to who go in person need to worry about, especially in some of these states like Michigan, where six men were just arrested by the FBI for plotting to kidnap the Democratic governor? And these are the kind of men that are armed and supportive of Trump and may want to sign up to be poll watchers.
Yeah, it's really beyond belief that we even have to have this conversation. But it is true, in 1981, Republican operation put many armed men in uniforms emblazoned with ballot security task force badges in front of polling places, largely in minority areas in a New Jersey election. They have been prevented from doing that through a dissent decree until 2018, as you mentioned. So this year really marks the first presidential election where we're going to be, I think, and again, this is driven possibly, you know, in cooperation with the RNC, but there are other groups that are involved as well, as you mentioned. And it's something that we should be concerned about, because there are very clear rules about poll watchers and what they can and cannot do. So in most cases, it is legal for poll observers to observe and take notes at precincts, to view mail-in and provisional ballot processing, ask questions of poll workers and the like. But it is absolutely illegal for poll observers or watchers to interfere with the election process or to wear campaign materials. And in particular, it's illegal for them to challenge voters.
So when you say campaign materials, if someone shows up wearing a Trump supporting t-shirt that's and tries to be a poll watcher, that's not allowed?
That is a form of electioneering. And while the laws vary by state, in California, it's 100 feet within a voting place. You cannot wear campaign materials and be an observer or a poll watcher. You cannot handle election materials. And I think it's really important to note that that 100 feet electioneering law applies only to electioneering. It does not apply to voter intimidation, which is illegal. And that is illegal within the vicinity. So that could mean a few blocks from a polling place. And if voters see any kind of voter intimidation happening, they should report it immediately. You should report it first to your local election official immediately, and then report it to your state election officials. And in California, we actually have a reporting hotline that's 1-800-345-8683.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time and expertise.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Michael Latner, professor of political science at Cal Poly State University and senior fellow at the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. We've been discussing election night, voting confusion, and results. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.